As Wes and Jim Ed drove down the main street, Jim Ed saw the gray Buick parked near the Levitt drugstore and was momentarily startled. It couldn't be what he thought it was. There were probably half a dozen gray Buicks in Big River just like his father's.
Now, where is John Talcott's office?
That's it yonder on the next corner. Used to be a dry goods store there. Town got too small for the store, but it's got more lawyers than it ever had.
The date on the building's square top said 1926, but the windows and the brick veneer that went up to awning level and stopped were of much more recent vintage. Whoever planned the remodeling must have assumed that no one would look higher than that, Jim Ed thought. He pulled his grandmother Maudie's Ford in against the curb.
You don't want me in there, do you?
You got something better to do?
Across the street at a service station, Jim Ed could see Shorty Bigham's red dually pickup raised up high on a grease rack. He thought he saw Shorty standing to one side, supervising the training of the crankcase.
I haven't seen Shorty in a long time. Kind of like to talk to him.
Apologize to him was more like it.
You've been working on my books. John might raise some question you can answer, like how I'm going to pay him.
That, Jim Ed thought, would be a good question. He gave Shorty Bigham a final regretful glance. If Shorty saw him, he gave no sign. John Talcott met them at the door. The attorney was not smiling. Jim Ed took that for an unfavorable sign.
I'm glad you could come in, Wes. Maybe we can get this matter all cleared up today.
It'd be a relief.
Wes's eyes showed an uneasiness. Talcott looked at Jim Ed.
If you'd like to come back after a while, say an hour.
I'd like Tater to stay. Anything I've got'll be his eventually.
Jim Ed discerned that Talcott would rather not have him there, but the attorney deferred to Wes.
As you will. Come on back to the conference room, then.
He led the way past a middle-aged secretary who seemed to be working very hard at appearing busy and not looking up from her typewriter. Wes stopped in surprise in the doorway and glanced questioningly at Talcott. Jim Ed tried to see past him. He recognized Orville Levitt, Sheriff Wally Vincent, and the banker, Matthew Jameson.
Wes, everybody here is your friend, whether you realize it at this moment or not. I've been in conference with them off and on for several days.
I've had conferences with them, too. They all know where I stand.
Talcott motioned toward two empty chairs.
Make yourself comfortable, Wes.
He made no offer to Jim Ed, who suspected he was trying to rush the obligatory amenities and get the unpleasant business finished as quickly as possible.
Now, Wes, I've studied the case thoroughly. And I've come to the reluctant conclusion that you cannot win. Your only course is to make the best settlement possible and bow out with grace.
Jim had watched his grandfather's face turn to stone.
Now, I've negotiated what I believe is better than a just compensation for your land. It's more than the appraised value by fully 30%, enough to pay what Matthew says you owe the bank and leave you a most generous retirement fund. That, together with the proceeds from the sale of your livestock and equipment, would set you up with more comfort than you have ever enjoyed in your life. And I'd say you've earned it.
He pushed a thick contract across to Wes.
As your attorney, I have made the best possible deal for you. At least I think, anyway. I would strongly urge that you accept.
Jameson shifted in his seat.
One more thing he didn't mention, Wes. You will not be out any attorney fees. The Water District will pay Mr. Talcott.
Wes's eyes narrowed and his chin jutted stubbornly as he gave the lawyer a look of contempt.
I believe you already did.
Wes cut his gaze back to Orville Levitt.
I suppose you had a hand in this, Orv.
Levitt nodded uncertainly.
I wouldn't go along with it until he agreed to give you a healthy bonus for the land. I know how much it means to you.
No, you don't. You couldn't.
Wes started to get up.
If you all want my land, you're going to have to send Wally out to shoot me and carry me off.
Wes hadn't realized there was someone behind the door in the corner of the room. As the door opened, he froze.
Truman.
Truman Hendricks moved forward hesitantly, his hand extended.
Papa?
Surprised, Wes was a moment in accepting the handshake. Truman then held out his hand to Jim Ed.
Hello, son.
Jim Ed took it.
Dad?
Jim Ed wished he were back at the university.
I suppose you're in on this with him, son.
Nobody's in on anything, Papa. They didn't like that. Now, the town needs the lake, and you need off that damn cedar pile before it kills you the way it killed my mother.
Your mother was happy living on that cedar pile. She might have died years sooner cooped up in a house in town.
Papa, you come out of this with more cash money than you ever had your hands on. You could buy anything you want.
What I want, I've already got. I just want to leave things the way they are. I wish everybody else could.
He gave Orville Levitt another glance, more of pain than of anger.
Things have changed for everybody else, Papa, and for the worse. That lake offers other people a chance to save things that are as important to them as that old ranch is to you. Now, once you're gone from it, you won't miss it half as much as you think. You'll have a chance to rest for the first time in your life. To sleep half the morning if you take the notion. You have all the time in the world. I want you to sign the papers, Papa.
Wes turned slowly to Jim Ed.
What do you say, Tater?
Jim Ed tried to speak, but his throat seemed to close tight.
James Edward has nothing to say here, Papa. But he would have if the case were to go to court.
Wes's eyes cut so hard that Jim Ed could not meet them. He looked at the floor.
Dad.
I sent him here this summer to help you, Papa. But I also told him to keep a watch on your physical condition and your mental condition. To serve as a witness if need be.
To spy on me? Is that right, Tater?
It's not like it sounds. He sent me here for that, but I haven't done it. I haven't told him a thing that would hurt you.
I should have known. I should have put you back on the bus the day you first come.
Wes stalked out of the room with a stride that belied his age. Anger gave Jim Ed voice. He turned on his father.
Why didn't you just shoot him? It wouldn't have hurt him half as much. Hope to hell you're satisfied.
He ran out after his grandfather.
Dad, dude, wait!
Wes stood on the street in front of Maudie's car, digging in his pockets.
Wait, I've got to talk to you.
Wes's eyes still cut.
The keys. The car keys.
Jim Ed handed him the keys.
Dad, dude, I want to explain.
Wes walked around the car and slid into the driver's seat. Jim Ed grabbed the handle on the passenger side and found it locked. Wes left Jim Ed choking on dust the tires raised from the gutter. He wanted to cry out, but realized it was no use. At the service station across the street, Shorty Bigham had just climbed into his big pickup.
Shorty!
Jim Ed ran across the street, dodging around a moving cattle truck that nearly choked him with its exhaust and the smell trailing it.
Shorty, I need a favor.
I already let you take Glory B. Ain't that favor enough?
Look, you just saw my grandfather pull away. I've got to catch him.
Didn't look to me like he much wanted you to.
But I've got things to explain to him.
Shorty studied him a moment, then jerked his head.
Get in.
Shorty made a quick U-turn and started off in the direction Wes had taken.
I supposed he was headed back to the ranch.
It's the only place he has to go.
Shorty gunned the pickup into a speed well above the legal limit.
If Wally Vincent catches me, there'll be hell to pay.
He's in Talcott's office.
Shorty whipped out onto the highway. A quarter mile ahead was Grandmother Maudie's gravy-colored car, doing perhaps 70 miles an hour.
You better take a deep hold on your hat.
He gunned the pickup even harder.
What'd you do to make the old man so mad?
I hurt him. I didn't mean to, but I hurt him.
Can't say that surprises me none. You got a habit of hurting people that try to be kind to you, seems to me like.
He leaned toward the steering wheel.
I ain't seen Glory B in a while. How is she?
She was fine until her grandmother took sick.
I heard about Miss Libby. She's a grand old lady.
They were rapidly gaining on the old car.
Shorty, I felt real bad about you and Glory B. It never was my intention to hurt you.
Shorty did not take his eyes from the road.
Hell, I never figured you did. Things just happen, that's all. Deep down, I always knew I was like a brother to her and nothing else. I knew somebody come along someday and she'd go off with him. I just hoped he wouldn't be a son of a bitch.
I never thought I was. Not till a little while ago, anyway.
His gaze was on the old car ahead.
Are we friends?
If you don't mind me getting mad enough at you once in a while to kick your butt, like now, for instance, what'd you do to hurt old Wes?
Jim Ed explained as best he could about his dad's mission for him.
But why'd you agree in the first place? You could have told your daddy no.
Jim Ed told him about flunking out of the university. His father, furious, had demanded that he come down to his grandfather's ranch, get his head together, and keep an eye on the old man's behavior.
You don't know what mad is till you've seen it in the eyes of a Hendrix. I was was afraid he'd break a blood vessel if I didn't give in.
I guess I can relate to that. I remember the time I stove in the fender of my daddy's best truck.
Shorty pulled the pickup just behind Monty's Ford and waited for an oncoming truck to go by, then pulled out to pass. He pressed the horn to get Wes's attention. As Shorty pulled abreast of Wes, Jim Ed motioned for his grandfather to pull over. Shorty went on around him, then drove off onto the shoulder and stopped. Wes passed him and kept going.
You did make him mad.
He drove back up on the highway and pulled up beside Wes again. He stayed even with him while Jim Ed motioned for his grandfather to stop. Finally, seeing a car coming in the opposite direction, Wes cut the wheel to the right and drew over onto the shoulder. Shorty quickly dropped behind him and stopped the pickup. Wes got out of the car, his face flushed.
You damn kids trying to get yourselves killed!
We're trying to get you to listen to me.
Wes wouldn't look at him.
Well, I'm listening.
Jim Ed realized he was talking too rapidly, but he had to get it said.
I was in trouble with my dad. At the time, it didn't look as if I had much choice. And I'll be honest with you. I did intend to keep tabs on you, but as soon as I got here, I changed my mind. I haven't seen anything that I thought would help them, and I wouldn't have told them if I did.
Wes gave him a quick look before cutting his gaze back to Shorty's clean and shiny pickup.
Not even that new fence?
That fence is a sign you're stubborn, not crazy.
Some would say it's the same thing with a senile old man.
Anybody who calls you senile's got me to fight.
And he can give it to them, too. I'll bet he never told you about them Potter brothers.
No, but I heard just the same. It seems to me like he took away something you thought you had a claim to.
He's a city boy. You gotta make allowances for ignorance.
Wes turned back to Jim Ed.
And I reckon I can make allowances too.
He jerked his head toward the car.
You take the wheel.
Starting around to the other side, Wes turned to Shorty.
You know, boy, you drive that thing way too fast.
Yes, sir. So I've been told.
Jim Ed reached out his hand, and Shorty took it.
Thanks, friend.
Just don't you ever hurt her.
Jim Ed assumed his grandfather wanted him to drive on to the ranch, and the old man told him no differently. He pulled across the cattle guard. Wes motioned.
The hill.
Jim Ed put the car up the hard grade, fearing its low-slung oil pan might drag a high center. When he stopped, Wes got out without speaking and started on ahead of him to the top, afoot. Jim Ed set the handbrake and followed. Wes walked a little farther than usual, all the way to the edge of a rim rock. Jim Ed sensed that his grandfather had rather be alone, so he hung back, watching from a distance. Wes must have stood for 10 minutes, silently surveying the valley, the river, the cedared hills. When he turned, he looked 10 years older. His eyes were dull with defeat. He passed Jim Ed without looking at him and walked back down toward the car, moving slower than when he had climbed up. He got in the car and hunched down in the seat.
Home?
Wes only nodded, looking at his boots. The old man didn't speak until they got back to the ranch. Wes stood in the yard and stared a moment at the house.
Now, I wish you'd run down to the milk pen and turn the calf out where it can find its mammy. I'm going to scatter a little feed for the horses and the chickens.
He looked back up the road.
They'll be coming out directly to carry on the conversation where it left off. I don't want to be around.
He turned away as if to discourage any questions, and Jim Ed asked none. He asked nothing until they climbed back into the car after turning out the calf and feeding the horses and chickens. Jim Ed put the key in the ignition.
Where to?
Out the back way. Otherwise, we're liable to meet him coming in.
Jim Ed took him to the hospital, up the elevator, and down the hall to Lavinia Dawson's room. After knocking, he gently pushed the door open to look inside. Lavinia smiled in recognition, and Glory B beamed.
Jim Ed!
Miss Livy, I brought somebody.
Tears came to Lavinia's eyes. She raised her hands for Wes to take. No words passed between them. Glory B came around the bed, took Jim Ed by the arm, and led him out of the room. In the hallway, she kissed him.
Thank you. She needed that.
So did he.
Glory B led him to a waiting area near the nurse's station and sat down beside him. He told her what had happened.
So now the floor's been taken out from under him. What's he gonna do?
I don't know. Try to find another lawyer, perhaps? What about your grandmother?
Glory B stared at the floor.
They'll be sending her home in a few days. Home to die. Kind of like Wes, except he won't have a home to go to.
Wes came out of Lavinia's room, finally, his head down. He walked past Glory B and Jim Ed, halting at a window which faced out upon the city. He stood with his back turned. He blew his nose, wiped his eyes, and turned.
I expect we'd better go, Tater. Livy needs a rest.
Glory B put her arms around Wes.
I've done a lot of praying for her. I'll add you to the prayers.
Wes hugged her.
Oh, if I ever have a granddaughter, I'd want her to be you.
Glory B glanced back at Jim Ed.
Who knows? Maybe things will work out.
Jim Ed unlocked the car door for Wes and held it while his grandfather crawled in. Then, settling in on the driver's side, he turned to Wes.
Where now? Back home?
And run into that bunch sitting there waiting like a flock of vultures?
Wes pondered.
Take me to the package store.
Wes picked up a fifth of bourbon, slumped into his seat. They set off. As they traveled, Wes dug in his pocket, retrieved something, and threw it out the window. The summer evening's heat remained heavy and oppressive. It aggravated a sour humor which had kept Sheriff Wally Vincent's stomach teetering on the verge of rebellion for most of 2 days. He wished for a breeze to cool the sweat that stuck his shirt to his back, but any wisp moving down the valley was blunted by the tightly huddled buildings along Big River's main street. Once the lake filled and he finished building the boat docks and resort he planned at the ranch, Vincent would gladly relinquish the sheriff's office. It was just a wage job anyway. Sell his house in town and leave this place for those who didn't know better or could afford to live somewhere else. His wife, Faye, recoiled at any discussion of moving back to the country. She grew up there and enjoyed town much better. But she would go, whether she liked it or not. That was the way things were run in the Vincent family. Though Orville Levitt usually closed his drugstore at 6 o'clock, Vincent could see him puttering around in the back. Suspicious, he placed his face against the plate glass window and shielded it with one hand to reduce the reflections. He would not put it past Levitt to have heard something about Wes Hendricks and to have kept the information to himself. Vincent was well aware Levitt didn't approve of him. The feeling was mutual.
Stupid old fart.
This town needed young and vital leadership. Not a mayor so old that he was probably his own pharmacy's best customer, just trying to keep himself alive. There was no telling what progress this community could make if it were not held back by old moss horns like Wes Hendricks and Orville Levitt, and by nosy, gossiping old women like Noreen. It could become a busy tourist attraction, trading on its new lake, its hunting, its hill country mystique like Kerrville or Fredericksburg or Bandera, and raking in all that money from well-heeled visitors trying to escape for a few days from the stress and congestion of Houston or San Antonio or Austin. Matthew Jameson's bank might enjoy some six-figure local accounts for a change and not be eternally hostage to the roller coaster ups and downs that bedeviled the cattle market.
If there's a worse investment in the world than a damn slobbering old cow, I don't know what it is, for Christ's sake.
His Hereford-loving father-in-law would turn over in his grave if he knew the plans Vincent was hatching for that rock pile of a ranch the old man nursed and babied for 40 years. People had dug around in these hills with pick and shovel for a century and more, looking for Jim Bowie's legendary lost silver mine. The whole story was probably just another outrageous Texas tale made up by some drunken liar in an age when great liars were legion. But let them watch Wally Vincent. He was fixing to show them where the real gold was. He tested the door, but found it locked. Orville Levitt took his own good time about coming to the front and opening up, his expression downcast.
Come in, Wally.
Thought you went home a long time ago.
Yeah, I did, but I came back to restock some shelves. Atmosphere around the house is kind of frosty anyway.
Well, that's what you get for letting Noreen have the upper hand. Tell her the back guy you're the boss.
Like you, Wally?
Damn right like me. My wife don't give me no sass.
Vincent's disposition was not improved by the skepticism in Levitt's eyes.
You heard anything out of Wes?
No, Truman's been staying out at the place since yesterday. Promised he'd call if Wes came home. Nobody seems to have any idea where he might have gone.
Well, we know we went to the ranch first. I found that out from the Bigham kid.
He gritted his teeth. He suspected he could have learned a lot more if that boy's big truck-driving daddy hadn't been standing there the whole time, hovering around his son like a protecting angel. If Vincent could have gotten that kid by himself...
You think John Talcott's been leveling with us that he don't know nothing? He is Wes's lawyer.
Was. You saw the way Wes looked at him. John feels real bad. He did what he thought was best for Wes. So did Truman. That's more than we've done. We've just thought about what was best for Big River and us.
Anything wrong with that? Man's got to watch out for himself because there sure ain't nobody else going to.
Wally couldn't understand the pain in Levitt's face. Once a man made up his mind to something, he ought never to look back.
If you hear anything, don't just sit on it. You come and find me.
He gave Levitt no more of his time, turning abruptly and walking back out into the street. He saw Bill Roper drive by in a pickup with a C-Bar brand painted on its door. Knowing how thick Roper and Wes Hendricks had always been, Vincent had driven out to the C-Bar headquarters yesterday and put the ranch foreman through a proper grilling. Roper shared not a damned thing. What was worse, he had let him know in the most combative terms that if he had known anything, he would not have told it. That C-Bar outfit was so big it had always done just about as it pleased, but things were fixing to change. Old Lady Dawson was dying, the way Vincent had heard it. The place was fixing to fall into the hands of a schoolgirl whose youth and inexperience would probably finish pushing it into bankruptcy. 4 generations of ownership by 1 old-fashioned, bull-stubborn family was just about enough.
About time.
He almost regretted he wouldn't be needing the sheriffing job much longer. Nothing would suit him better than a chance, the first time an occasion arose, to let the C-Bar bunch feel the full authority of the law without having to consider their financial and political influence. That Bill Roper in particular would look real good sitting there with his face pressed between the bars, and no Old Lady Dawson to come down raising hell about it. Vincent found nothing on the courthouse square to hold his attention further. He got in his black county automobile and drove to Lacey's Cafe. Just 1 car sat in front. Most of the supper crowd had already gone. A teenage Hispanic boy and girl were finishing hamburgers at a table in the corner. Stella Tenney came out of the kitchen. Her mouth dropped open at sight of Vincent. She glanced quickly at the teenagers and forced a courteous formality.
Good evening, Sheriff. What can I do for you?
Well, you know what you can do for me.
Eyes narrowed, she pointed her chin toward the 2 youngsters. Vincent thought the pair were so wrapped up in each other they wouldn't notice if the place caught fire. He could understand the feeling, for Stella had that effect on him. Staring hungrily at her, he wondered how he had ever considered his wife pretty 20-odd years ago. He supposed his notion of beauty had been considerably influenced by the size of her father's ranch.
Menu or just coffee?
Coffee'll do for now. Later, maybe more. A whole lot more. Been 3 nights now since me and you entertained one another.
He took a table where he could watch the street through the big window. She leaned near as she set the coffee in front of him. Her perfume and the warmth he felt from her body were like gasoline tossed on a fire already threatening to flare out of control. She no longer addressed him as honey the way she did most folks. Sometimes he couldn't tell whether she was really drawn to him or was simply too fearful to put up resistance. In the long run, it didn't matter. Results were what counted.
Grandma's still in the kitchen.
That old woman can't hear thunder.
Even so, he restrained an impulse to run his hand up and down her thigh. Presently, the gray-haired, slightly stooped woman came to the kitchen doorway. She gave the sheriff a look that said she had never voted for him and never would, then gave Stella a nod indicating she was leaving.
You go on home and get your rest now, Grandma. See you tomorrow.
Vincent glowered at the two teenagers, who had long since finished their hamburgers and now dallied, feeding each other French fries one at a time.
Mexicans.
There had been a time they would not have been allowed to eat in here like white folks.
That's what the country gets for letting everybody vote.
A man couldn't say anything anymore, but nobody could stop him from thinking what he felt like. After what seemed half an hour, the pair downed the last swallows of their cokes, paid up, and got into the only vehicle left in front other than the sheriff's.
There's a couple that can't hardly wait for dark.
He ran his hand up the front of Stella's blouse.
Seems to me like you can't either.
She drew back a step. He reached for her again, and she moved farther away.
There's a time and a place for everything. This ain't either one.
I'll be along later. Leave your back door unlocked.
You know, you ain't near as sneaky as you think you are. There's rumors going around about you and me.
Who gives a damn about gossip?
I think your wife does, for one.
All I have to do is tell her there's nothing to it. She believes what I tell her.
She was in here yesterday, sat at that table right over yonder and drank two cups of coffee and looked daggers at me the whole time. She knows.
I'll handle her. As for the others, I don't give a damn.
Well, maybe I give a damn. I want to protect my reputation even if you don't.
Your reputation? Hell, you're living up to your reputation, except you've never asked for money.
Her face went scarlet. She picked up his half-empty cup of still-hot coffee and dashed it in his face. He grabbed her arm and pushed quickly to his feet. He brought back his hand to strike her, but caught himself in time. He let her go, picked up a paper napkin, and wiped off as much of the coffee as he could.
I'll be around tonight and collect for that.
You'll find my door locked.
It better not be. You'll be buying yourself a new door or a bus ticket out of town.
You wouldn't.
Wouldn't I? I'd sense the votes from 75% of the women in this town if I was to bust you for vagrancy. So you think about that, Stella. You think real hard.
She stepped back, well out of his reach.
You're a real brass-plated son of a bitch, Wally Vincent, and you're building yourself up for a fall.
Who's gonna throw me? You?
He opened the door and turned to her.
Tonight, Stella.
He stood outside the cafe a moment, his gaze taken in the street. He saw a familiar Ford of 1970s vintage and watched as it passed, heading toward the center of town. A grim smile crept across his face.
Ask and ye shall receive.
He walked to his car. Jim Ed thought it would have been better to have driven directly to the ranch. More than anything, his grandfather needed to go to bed. Wes had put away almost the whole bottle of whiskey on the drive home. He was slumped in the seat. Jim Ed couldn't understand anything, so he simply nodded in agreement and compassion. In his grandfather's place, he would probably have drunk too much, too. A lot of ground had been cut from under Wes the last few days. The needle on the gasoline gauge sat near the empty mark, so Jim Ed thought it expedient to come by town and fill the tank. He would not want to walk part of the way home, supporting an old man who probably couldn't walk at all. Passing Orville Levitt's store, he saw Levitt at the door, locking up. The old man looked more slump-shouldered than usual, carrying a weight not entirely of age. Levitt turned in time to see the car. Recognition was instantaneous, and he waved both hands.
Oh, no.
The last thing Wes needed now was a renewal of yesterday's confrontation. The rearview mirror showed Levitt following in a hobbling gait as near a trot as he could muster. Jim Ed looked at the gasoline gauge again and knew he had no choice. He pulled in at a service station on the corner past the drugstore. Stepping out of the car, he looked back in resignation. Perhaps when Levitt saw Wes's condition, he would recognize it was futile to argue now. Jim Ed saw no reason for argument anyway. They had Wes by the short hairs. A schoolboy station attendant began filling the tank. Orville Levitt was almost out of breath when he reached the car and bent to look in at Wes. He glanced up with misgivings.
Is he all right?
No. He's drunk. I should think you'd know why.
You shouldn't have let him. You know the condition of his heart.
And you know my grandfather well enough to know that whatever he decides to do, he'll do it or bust a gut trying.
Yeah, God, yes, how well I know.
Wes raised his head and looked up at Levitt, but seemed not to recognize him. Or perhaps he just didn't give a damn anymore.
You need to get him home and put him to bed. Maybe I ought to go with you.
You're part of his problem. I think the best thing you can do is keep out of his sight.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I just wish there'd been some better way.
He turned toward the sound of a big engine. Sheriff Vincent's car pulled in against the curb. The blocky lawman climbed out, making a cold smile that touched Jim Ed with a chill.
Well, the prodigal decided to come home.
Levitt took a defensive stance beside Wes's door.
This is not the time, Wally.
No? I don't know any better time to march him over to Talcott's office and make him sign them papers.
Talcott's closed. We can do it another day.
I can phone him and get him down here.
Vincent pushed past Levitt and grasped the door handle.
Come on out, Wes.
Jim Ed walked quickly around the car.
You leave him alone.
Vincent's eyes went half shut, but Jim Ed could still see the threat in them.
You talking to me, boy?
He's not in any shape right now. You can wait a day or two.
Vincent pulled the door open and leaned in.
He's drunk. By God, he's drunk.
He shook Wes's shoulder.
Get out of that car, old man.
He grasped Wes's arm and started pulling him. Jim Ed's face went to flame. He grabbed the sheriff and tried to force him away from his grandfather.
I said leave him alone.
Wally Vincent responded with a massive fist that Jim Ed hardly saw. He stumbled off the curb and sprawled on his back. Lights flashed and wheeled crazily in concert with a roaring pain in his head. He lay a moment, aware that Vincent had pulled Wes from the car. The old man staggered.
For God's sake, Vincent, what the hell are you doing?
Turner!
Orville Levitt attempted angrily to interfere, but Vincent pushed him aside. Wes came out of his stupor. He tried to reach his grandson. Vincent yanked him back. Wes struggled and Vincent slapped him.
Old man, you're under arrest!
Wes doubled over, clutching at his chest. Jim Ed swayed to his feet in alarm. Wes would have fallen had Vincent not held him. Vincent dragged him toward the black car with the badge painted on the door.
Drunk and disorderly! I got a cell just waiting for a useless old fart like you. Time you get out, you'll be begging to sign that paper.
He's not just drunk, he's sick.
Orville Levitt regained his composure and his determination.
Wally, he's having a heart attack.
He's just drunk.
A black rage overtook Jim Ed. He threw his arms around Vincent, trying to wrestle the man loose from Wes. Vincent stumbled and went to one knee, then came up, trying to drive the knee into Jim Ed's groin. Jim Ed slammed the sheriff against the black car. Vincent reached for the pistol at his hip, then dropped it in the gutter. Jim Ed's fist struck him full in the face. Then Jim Ed gave him another fist in the stomach. Out of the corner of his eye, he saw Wes sinking toward the sidewalk, Orville Levitt easing him down so his head wouldn't strike the concrete. Wes's hands convulsed against his chest. Jim Ed grabbed up the pistol. It was his intention to pitch it across the street where Vincent couldn't handily reach it, but once his hands were on it, he seemed unable to turn it loose.
Damn you, you'll let him alone!
Vincent's nose was bleeding, as was Jim Ed's own. He saw blood spotting his shirt, and his knuckles were torn. Blood on his hands made the pistol grip sticky. Vincent stared at the weapon, his eyes betraying a momentary fear.
Yeah, boy, you just lay that thing down.
The anxiety in Levitt's face was like ice laid against Jim Ed's spine.
Wes, you hang on!
Desperately, he went through Wes's pockets.
Where are they? Where's what?
His heart pills. He's always carried them in his pocket.
I don't know. They ought to be there.
Suddenly, he remembered. His grandfather had reached into his pocket just after they left the package store. He had hurled something into the weeds by the road.
Oh, God, he threw them away.
He let his arm drop, the pistol's muzzle pointing to the sidewalk. Wally Vincent was upon him in one stride, wrenching the pistol from him, striking him across the side of the head with it. Jim Ed sprawled again on his stomach. Vincent stood swaying, his face crimson.
Wally, Wes is dying!
Like hell he is. I'm taking him to jail.
He was oblivious to the crowd rapidly gathering around. He holstered his pistol and started toward Wes. Levitt lunged at the sheriff, grabbing both his arms. At that moment, he was not just another wearied old man. He was the cowboy he had been 50 years ago, strong and forceful and driven by a righteous anger.
Listen to me, you boneheaded son of a bitch! If you let him die, I'll file charges on you for manslaughter.
Only then did Vincent seem to become aware of the spectators gathering. He hesitated, and Levitt gave him no chance to resume the initiative. He took charge.
Tater, I hope Wally left you in shape to drive.
He looked at the boy who had filled the tank.
Help me put Wes in a car.
A bystander lifted Jim Ed to his feet. He slid behind the wheel. Levitt crawled into the back seat after Wes, vigorously rubbing Wes's arms.
Whip back to the drugstore. He's gotta have a heart pill.
Jim Ed made a tire-squealing U-turn and pulled into the bus space at the drugstore's curb.
Daddy, please! Daddy, hang in there, please!
He massaged his grandfather's arms while Levitt hurried into the store. The druggist was back almost at once and placed a pill in Wes's mouth.
Now to the doctor! Hurry!
Jim Ed made another U-turn and sped up the street, past the sheriff, past the bystanders still gathered in front of the service station. An elderly woman was shaking her finger in Wally Vincent's face. Someone evidently had telephoned the doctor, for he was standing out in front with a nurse and an orderly, waiting to rush Wes inside.
He's had a heart attack. I gave him nitro, but I don't know how much good it'll do.
Jim Ed could only follow in their excited wake, his heart hammering. The vision was blurred in his right eye. He put his hand to his face. He felt heat and swelling and the gumminess of warm blood. He tried to follow Wes and Levitt and the doctor, but a nurse stopped him at swinging double doors. He dropped down upon a couch, his burning eyes closed, his face in his trembling hands. His stomach churned, and he felt it would empty itself at any moment. He couldn't remember the last time he'd been in church, but it felt right to pray a little under his breath. He became conscious of the front door opening, heavy footsteps crossing the floor. He knew before he opened his eyes, Wally Vincent stood before him, towering like a hunter animal about to fall on its prey.
You coming easy, or have I got to put the cuffs on you?
Vincent grabbed one of Jim Ed's wrists, then the other, clamping handcuffs over them.
You coming now, or have I got to cold cock you?
At least wait till I know about my grandfather.
We ain't waiting for nothing. I got enough now to send you off to work for the state for 2 or 3 years, boy. Resisting lawful command, attacking an officer of the law, attempted murder.
Attempted murder?
You taking my pistol and try to shoot me with it?
I didn't try to shoot you.
You held it on me. I got plenty of witnesses. Time you get out of jail, boy, that old granddaddy of yours have a beard plumb down to his feet.
He took hold of the short chain between the cuffs and yanked hard.
Come on!
Jim Ed tried to turn to see if somebody wouldn't come out from behind those double doors and help him, or at least tell him something. But Vincent dragged him outside, pitched him into the back seat of the black car, and sped off to the jail. For the first time in years, Jim Ed bowed his head and cried. The jail was probably 80 years old, but a state law required that it and others like it be kept to an ever-tightening set of standards. The cell had a toilet and wash basin. Jim Ed was able to wash the blood from his swollen face, though the effort seared the lacerated skin. His right eye, almost closed, throbbed with a vengeance. He sat hunched on the hard mattress in a black and smothering despair. He listened for footsteps that might mean news, but the jail was as quiet as a church. So far as he could tell, it housed but one other inmate in another cell. The man appeared to be a Mexican immigrant, possibly illegal, probably on storage here for safekeeping until the Immigration Service could pick him up and deport him to Mexico. The man spoke a few words to him in Spanish, but Jim Ed's command of that language was slight. Effort at communication was soon abandoned. Jim Ed sat in a brooding silence, remembering the agonized look upon his grandfather's face as he had sunk to the sidewalk.
God, please watch over him.
The cell gradually darkened as night came on, and it remained dark until someone flipped a switch that lighted a dim bulb on the ceiling between the barred cells. Jim Ed gave up and stretched out upon the mattress, but he didn't sleep. He kept seeing his grandfather, hearing his voice, sharing the old man's desperation. He became aware, finally, of a key rattling in the outer bullpen door. He raised up, trying to focus his vision. The right eye was swollen shut. Wally Vincent approached his cell.
Rise and shine, boy.
He sought out a key from a large ring and unlocked the cell door.
Come on out of there.
Jim Ed pushed shakily to his feet. He found his ribs hurting and tried to remember when the sheriff had struck him there.
My grandfather. What about my grandfather?
That old bastard's too mean to kill. He's already sitting up and taking nourishment.
Thank God.
He grasped one of the bars for support. Vincent tapped his foot impatiently.
If you ain't coming out, I'll shut the door again and let you spend the night.
I've been bailed out.
I decided to be generous. There ain't gonna be no charges after all.
How come?
Well, when your granddaddy came around, we had us a little talk. He made us a little deal.
Jim Ed suddenly knew what the deal had been. His stomach burned.
You blackmailed him.
You go throwing that word around, you can find yourself back in here so quick it'll make your head spin.
Spinning now. You had him beat anyway if you'd just been patient.
Patience is for old people. I never did like to stand around and wait. If you're coming, come on. If you're not, you can share this place with Pablo tonight.
As Jim Ed walked outside, he saw Orville Levitt and Bill Roper waiting, their shadows long in the light of the street lamp overhead. Both stepped forward to meet him. Roper bent and peered closely at Jim Ed's face.
Orv, we gotta do something about that.
The doctor'll fix him up.
That ain't what I mean. It's time we see to it that Wally Vincent is retired for good from the county payroll.
That won't bother him much, now that he's got what he wants.
What about my grandfather?
He'll be all right. We got that pill down him in time, you and me.
Not me. You saved his life.
Yeah, well, he saved mine a time or two. Back in the cow-punching days. Come on, he wants to see you.
Roper took them to the doctor's clinic in the C-Bar pickup. Jim Ed was surprised to find his father sitting in a chair beside Wes's bed. Truman arose quickly. Like everyone else, he examined Jim Ed's face and muttered about Wally Vincent. Wes's cheeks were drained and his eyes were dull, but he didn't look half so bad as Jim Ed had expected.
Wally don't miss a chance, does he?
You shouldn't have done it. You shouldn't have given up to him on my account.
Wes had the hopeless look of a man who had surrendered without condition.
I'd lost anyhow. Maybe old Snort was an omen. I know it for sure in John Talkett's office. It's just a question of time.
He reached out a hand, and Jim Ed took it.
I'd have done anything to get you out of that jail. No telling what Wally would have done to you if I'd left you in there.
You signed the papers?
I will tomorrow. I gave my word.
Truman looked at Jim Ed.
Papa's agreed to come to Dallas and live with us as soon as he's put his affairs in order.
Jim Ed could see dread rise in his grandfather's eyes.
Dallas isn't for you.
I don't see that I got a choice. I played out my last hand, looks like.
Tears burned Jim Ed's left eye. They couldn't make it past the swelling in the other one. 6 months, he thought. He won't live 6 months. When the doctor had finished cleaning and painting and patching his face, Jim Ed reluctantly climbed into his father's automobile, and the two started toward the ranch. Jim Ed stared morosely at the lighted dashboard.
You know he never even liked to visit Dallas. He'll hate living there.
He'll get used to it. Once he puts that damn old ranch behind him, he'll realize he's a lot better off.
You can't cut an old tree off from its roots and transplant it. It'll die.
Lots of old people have had to leave the land and move to the city, especially these last few hard years. They learn. Your grandfather is tougher than you give him credit for.
Jim Ed kept remembering the despair in Wes's eyes.
Tough enough to will himself to die. You knew he threw his heart pills away.
Orville told me. But that'll all pass. Once he's acclimated to a new way of life, an easier way.
A dependent way, Jim Ed thought.
I hated this country when I first came here, but it grew on me, like he grew on me. I know what it means to him. I think I even understand why, but you don't. You always hated it.
Truman kept his eyes on the narrow arc of Ranch Road illuminated by the headlights.
I ought to have been born in the city. I never did fit here. In Papa's sight, I couldn't do anything right when it came to cattle and horses. Even sheep wouldn't pay any attention to me. James Edward was the cowboy. He could do anything he set his mind to. Everything I tried turned into a wreck. Papa always held James Edward up as an example to remind me of my shortcomings. I just couldn't be the hand he was. I wasn't born that way. I just counted the years it was going to take for me to go out on the highway and never come back. But I owe Papa. He drove me into finding a trade and making myself a professional at what I did. He never would stand for anything less. That's probably a good thing I was never a cowboy. If I had been, I'd probably still be on one of these old ranches, working for house, groceries, and $600 a month. Some of us are just born to be one thing and some another. We can't change that.
We both know what Wes Hendricks was born to. Now they've taken it away from him.
He slept little, reliving the previous day. Truman had made an appointment to meet John Talcott at the clinic at 9:30 and carry the papers in for Wes to sign. Talcott's secretary was there to notarize the event, witnessed by Orville Levitt and the doctor. Jim Ed thought Wes's color was better, though defeat remained a sickness in the old gray eyes. Wes said nothing more than was necessary to answer questions. After signing with a shaking hand, he turned toward the wall. Levitt's face was as sad as Wes's.
I'm sorry, Wes. I wouldn't have had it this way at all.
If you all don't mind, I'm awful tired.
Jim Ed stayed a moment after the others left the room. He squeezed Wes's hand.
I'm sorry, too.
Don't be blaming yourself. It'd have happened this way without you. Like I told you once, it ain't just the land. It's the memories tied to it. Maybe keeping the memories alive costs more than we can afford to pay. The past is fine to visit, but it could be a prison if you was to let yourself get trapped there. Now go along, boy, and let me rest.
Jim Ed walked out into the clinic lobby where the others talked quietly among themselves. He realized someone was missing.
Where's Wally Vincent? Why isn't he here to gloat?
Orville Levitt glanced at John Talcott and smiled thinly.
Wally's eating crow today, I think. Seems like that lake won't be doing him much good after all.
Talcott nodded.
Faye Vincent was waiting when I opened my office this morning. She wanted me to start divorce proceedings. It seems she caught Wally after midnight in a bed not his own.
Stella Tenney.
Odd thing. Faye received an anonymous telephone call that her husband would be going to Stella's. She took Noreen Levitt for a witness. They sat in her car and watched him go in the back door. They waited a little while, then walked into the bedroom and switched on the lights. The evidence was beyond challenge.
Noreen said the sight was just too scandalous to talk about. But you kept me up all the rest of the night talking about it.
Wonder who telephoned the tip?
It was a young woman's voice. Faye said she would swear the woman sounded like Stella herself. But of course, that doesn't make sense.
Levitt looked toward the double doors.
At least Wally won't profit from your grandfather's sacrifice. By inheritance, the ranch belongs to Faye, not to Wally. And he'll play hell winning another election. That ought to be some satisfaction to Wes.
Some to me. But my grandfather still lost.
Glory B and Hallie Roper brought Lavinia Dawson home to the big house at C-Bar headquarters 2 days later. Glory B telephoned Jim Ed.
When are you taking Wes home to the ranch?
This afternoon. The doctor says it's safe.
Could you bring him by here on the way? Graham wants to see him. And I want to see you.
I don't think you want to see me right now. I look terrible.
We heard. Come anyway. You might find it worth your while.
He puzzled for a long time over how she meant that. Truman was dubious, but Wes and Jim Ed overruled him. Jim Ed put his father's Buick through the decorative arch and onto the road to the C-Bar headquarters. Truman opened the car door for Wes.
Now, Papa, you walk slowly. Jim Ed and I'll help you up these steps. You don't want to exert yourself.
I've worked on my own 2 feet ever since I was a yearling.
Jim Ed helped him anyway when they reached the steps. Glory B met them on the porch and threw her arms around Jim Ed. Truman stared. No one had prepared him for that. Glory B moved back a step to regard Jim Ed's face with misgivings.
That is going to hell, isn't it? That's not a face I want to look at for the rest of my life.
Glory B took Wes's arm. She escorted him into her grandmother's bedroom. Hallie Roper raised her hand, signaling Jim Ed and Truman and Bill to wait a little. In a moment, Glory B was back in the hallway.
They'll be more at ease if we leave him alone a few minutes.
Jim Ed noted that his father betrayed no surprise. He must have known all these years. After a time, Wes opened the door.
Livy wants everybody to come in.
Livy Dawson's face was drawn and pale, but her eyes showed that a strong will for life still lingered. Whatever was coming, she was meeting it head on without a whimper. She grasped Jim Ed's hand and, like everybody else, had something to say about the deplorable condition of his face. Then she shifted her attention back to Jim Ed's grandfather.
Wes, I've had a lot of time with nothing to do except think. It saddens me that you've signed away your ranch.
I didn't have no choice.
I hear they're paying a good price for it.
Some things money can't make up for.
It can make up for a lot if you put it in the right place. You know the financial shape this ranch is in, I suppose.
I've never pried.
Lavinia looked at Glory B, and love warmed her eyes.
I've had a good life. I have but one real regret in leaving it. I regret that I can't pass my father's ranch on to Glory B in as strong a shape as it was left to me.
Glory B gently placed her hand on her grandmother's pale forehead.
Graham, it doesn't matter.
It does matter. A lot.
Lavinia's gaze went back to Wes.
Old friend, you could help me.
Oh, I can't even help myself.
The money you'll get for your ranch wouldn't pay off what we owe, but it would give Glory B a firmer foundation to build from.
You want to borrow it? It's yours.
Not borrow it. We've had a lot in common over the years, Wes. One thing, we've both loved that old Live Oak camp.
Wes could only nod.
I'll sell it to you, Wes. It won't be the same as your place, but maybe it'll serve.
You'd sell me Live Oak Camp?
For Glory B's sake, so she can save the rest.
Papa, no!
Wes's gray eyes began to come alive.
Live Oak Camp. But it was your daddy's place. It'd be a pity to let it go out of your family.
Lavinia turned to Glory B and Jim Ed, whose arms were around one another.
I have a feeling it won't be far out of the family.
But, Papa, you'd just be trading one old worn-out ranch for another. You're not in any condition to take care of a place like that by yourself anymore.
Bill and Hallie have been looking for an investment of their own to go along with their work here. If you took Bill in as a partner on the livestock, Wes, you'd have all the help you need.
Wes trembled with rising excitement, enough so that Jim Ed was glad Orville Levitt had given him a new bottle of pills to carry in his pocket. Wes's gaze went to Bill Roper.
It could be a poor investment. You know the shape the cow business is in.
It'll get better. I lay awake all night last night hoping you'd say yes.
Hallie took her husband's arm.
When he doesn't sleep, I don't sleep. Please let us do it, Wes.
Wes walked away and stared out the window. He wiped a hand across his eyes before he let anyone see his face. He turned back to Truman.
Son, much obliged, but I don't believe I'll be needing your spare bedroom after all.
Papa, you'll die out there one of these days.
I couldn't pick a better place to do it.
Leaning over Lavinia, he grasped both of her hands and kissed them.
Livy, you're a blessed woman.
I'm a businesswoman. I know a good deal when I see it, that's all.
Her eyes were soft, shining in the memory of long ago.
I'm tired now. If y'all don't mind, I'll rest a while.
Hallie Roper walked to the windows and pulled the shades to darken the room. Then she went out with her husband and with Truman, who was still shaking his head. Glory B and Jim Ed paused at the door to look back. Wes lingered by Lavinia's bedside. He was holding her hands. Glory B led Jim Ed to a window at the end of the hall. Through it, he could see the limestone hills stretching to the west, one after another, turning blue as the sun lowered behind them.
Times change. People come and people go, but those old hills stay the same. However mixed up or troubled I may get, I can look at them and recover my perspective. They're timeless.
Jim Ed had not thought of them as an emotional anchor.
I suppose.
My great-grandfather Chatfield would have cussed anybody who accused him of being a romantic. But I like to think he put this house just where it is so his family would always be able to draw strength from this view. 4 generations of us have stood here and looked out this window.
You won't be the last.
Damn right I won't. I made an ironclad promise to Graham that there'll be other generations here after me.
You'll need help to get those other generations started.
Do you have anyone in mind?
I've got a wasted semester to make up. After that, I'll apply for the job if you can find some use around here for an inexperienced business manager.
She leaned to him, clutching his arm as she stared out the window.
Stick with me, Pilgrim. And you'll get the experience.
The Man Who Rode Midnight is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 1990, Elmer Kelton. Published by arrangement with the estate of Elmer Kelton, care of Sobel Weber Associates, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2013, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Hazelford, Evan Casey, Christopher Graybill, Casey Platt, Tim Carlin, Thomas Keegan, Joe Brack, Dylan Lynch, Lily Beacon, Kimberly Gilbert, Elizabeth Jernigan, Michael Glenn, Faith Potts, Ren Casey, David Coyne, David Harris, Ken Jackson, Bobby Aselford, Nanette Savard, Johan Detweiler, Bradley Smith, Colleen Delaney, Christopher Sheeran, Richard Rowan, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Book adapted for graphic audio by Timothy Lynch. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Damian Chop Richardson. With original music by Thomas Hogan and Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Man Who Rode Midnight, be sure to look for Elmer Kelton's The Wolf and the Buffalo and the Huey Calloway series. Available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, audio guides, and podcasts. Keep listening for exciting previews of other titles in graphic audio.
A surprise.
Are you alone?
At the moment. Raymond, aren't you supposed to be dead?
Not that I know of.
How did he die?
They said you both died on Olympus Creek. Are we correct in assuming that you are no longer working with the Unified Authority?
Yes, sir. That would be a correct assumption.
Are you fugitives?
Enemies might be a better description.
Arthur tracked the Avatari signal to Boda's galaxy. The Navy should have sent a fleet to destroy their home world by now.
Admiral, we have lost 3/4 of our fleet. We no longer have the firepower we need to carry out our mission. We must return to Earth. We must report that we have located the aliens and request a larger fleet and more troops. As the Master Chief has suggested, we should have our SEALs open the way and send in Marines.
What do you suggest? Master Chief?
Maybe we should return to Earth.
We should return?
We should return and report what we have found. If we attack now and we fail, everything we have learned will be lost. We need to make our report, then launch our attack. We're not here to defeat this enemy. We need to destroy them.
William Harris? Well, that's an order!
Any last words?
Look, we got all kinds of stuff. I promise, I'll give you half of everything! No, all of it! All of it! I'm good for it!
Sounds like you've got the golden goose. Maybe I should let you go.
Oh, you won't be sorry. You won't! You're gonna be rich!
We meet right here, day after tomorrow. If you're not here with enough swag to fill a transport, you're a dead man. Get out of here.
Why did you let him go?
Didn't you hear? He's going to make me rich.
You're never going to see him again!
Damn straight I'm not gonna see him again. Why the spec do you think we evacuated this planet? In 3 hours, the city's going to be dust, and that bastard is gonna be dust along with it.
I told you to kill him! You disobeyed a direct order!
Yeah, we need to talk about that. Admiral, I'm relieving you of command.
You're what?
These are dire times, Admiral, and you're not fit for command.
Who the hell do you think you're speaking to?
Admiral Stephen R. Jolly, enlisted man's navy, retired.
You can't do this!
Captain Holman, how much do you know about ancient Rome?
I know about the Praetorian Guard.
Really? Are you a fan of the classical age?
Not until recently. Am I looking down the barrel of a promotion?
A big one.
What about Admiral Jolly?
Shot by a looter. That was on Gobi. You saw the report.
And now you're placing me in charge?
I have every confidence in you.
Did you have every confidence in Admiral Jolly?
I was obligated to give him a shot because of his seniority.
You killed him.
Not me. It was the looter.
Are you gonna kill me if I screw up?
I need a commander. Are you in or out?
I'm in.
Glad to hear it. You couldn't have taken this post at a better time. We're about to launch a sensitive operation.
Captain! There's something out there!
Where?
I'm changing course! I'm changing course!
Shields up!
They're robotic! I'm detecting a signal!
Clear path! We need to break through!
Know this, gentlemen. Our only chance of survival is to establish a colony on a planet that the aliens have already attacked. We are going to colonize Terrano. As many of you know, the Unified Authority patrols that area. Our barges will be vulnerable. The Navy has asked a lot of you over the last month, and you have delivered. Now I'm going to ask even more of you than ever. Some of you will be asked to make the ultimate sacrifice. In order for this plan to work, we will need to draw the UA fleet away from Providence Cree and Terrano. That means opening a front that will draw the Unified Authority's forces away. We are going to invade Earth.
Stephen L. Kent. Rogue Clone. Book 7. The Clone Redemption.
Available now in graphic audio.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.